Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
Am I getting overboard here if I say that maybe this particular Bear game, this particular weekend, could be season defining? Is that too much?
Maybe a little bit.
As good as the Saints have played, maybe they used up all their goodwill.
Nobody likes
maybe
as much.
Maybe they haven't faced a defense like this.
I love hyperbole, you know, but I think that might be a little bit strong because...
Okay, let me rephrase it.
All right.
Could this be the most important game of the decade? Listen, the Bears have had a lot of time to kind of sit back and contemplate what went awry in London, and they didn't turn up for that game is what really went awry. Eddie Jackson joins us.
You know, we want to get that bad taste out of our mouths. You know, and unfortunately, we had to wait for a bye week. You know, right now, we just back on track. You know, we just putting them behind us and coming out. Now we got to make a statement game here at home.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Your morning guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
Here's the kick now. The pitch, fastball, is hit in the air to left center field. Robles calling for it. He's under it waiting. And he makes the catch. He makes the catch. Bang. Zoom go the fireworks. A National League championship winning. Curly W is in the books. And for the first time since 1933, we'll have a World Series in the nation's capital.
I thought it would happen. It did happen.
Wow. That's good.
Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And what an unbelievable treat this morning. We have Zach Zaidman, the ginger hair genius. A man that is nicknamed both for his mental acuity and his exotic nature. Good morning, Zach. Thank you for sitting in.
Both factually accurate. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. Oh, my giddy aunt. Hello, my buddy.
How are you, my buddy? How's life? How's every little thing? Tell us all your secrets. Darkest, most horrible secrets. Tell us the things that no one should know of you.
I did not expect to have most of October off.
That's not a dark, dirty secret. I think that's all of us.
Didn't you read Pacoda?
I was reading Pacoda. Like, it sounds like an author's name or, you know, well, Pacoda wrote.
It's named after Bill Pacoda. Remember him? No, he was a nondescript infielder back in the day. But anyway, Pacoda goes over most people's heads. That's why I don't mention it. How about the Washington Nationals, though? Do you realize the only team in Major League Baseball that is now not advanced to the World Series? The Seattle Mariners.
That's right. That is exactly right. It's the Seattle Mariners. They stand alone. And remember they had that great year where they won like, you know, 217 games.
Yeah, Lou Piniella was the manager. Who beat him?
162 games.
Who beat him? It was 2001.
No idea. Who beat him?
The Yankees.
The Yankees win? The Yankees win.
The Diamondbacks won the World Series that year, actually. But yeah, Seattle won 116 regular season victories.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, I told you, over 200 victories.
We're just about, yeah.
Weirdest thing ever in 162 game slate.
Man,
but
crazy.
They couldn't turn that into a World Series, and now they'll never win, ever.
They ran into a legit dynasty in the New York Yankees
yes,
back then.
That was when the Yankees were winning five in a row, right?
I think they won three in a row, and the Diamondbacks ended the stretch of championships.
And then they won a couple more?
No.
Didn't the Yankees win a ton of – well, they won a bunch of them years ago, but that's neither here nor there.
Like in the 40s?
Well, they were pretty good back then.
98, 99, 2000, I believe, was the Yankees' three-peat.
Right, which ended with the Diamondbacks knocking them off in 2001.
Did Joe win one when he
Joe won one, which is considered a failure in New York, which is why he's on the managerial interviewing circuit.
Well, it's regardless, you have been given an early release. What have you done with all that time, Zach? All the time that you thought you would be spending covering playoff games?
Watched a lot of football.
Yes, there's a lot of football to watch.
A lot of flag football. And I don't mean two-hand touch. There's just a lot of flags that have been thrown around.
Yes.
During the National Football League this
season. I wish they would get that straightened out. Now again, I think it's important to make a qualification and say that there are penalties in football, and as long as it's a real penalty, there's no problem with it. But it's some of these fake penalties or weird penalties or phantom calls, whatever way you want to put it. And to me, the biggest call that the new process of the catch is roughing the passer. I just don't understand what is or what is not roughing the passer. I don't, you know, by the end of that process of the catch stuff, I knew that rule inside and out. I knew that it probably was a real catch, but according to their rules, that's not a catch. And you could go through life content. According to their rules, there, as bad as the rule was, you understood what the way they were looking at it. This whole nonsense with roughing the passer, it's just kind of like, it just seems so arbitrary.
Yeah, but that's not as big of a problem.
Arbitrator.
I don't think that's as big of a problem as the pass interference, because
interference is nonsensical.
If you can challenge it, and several teams did early on in the first month of the season, and it's not being overturned when it's egregious, now teams aren't even throwing the challenge flag. So what's the point of having that rule? That's where I think you just – it leaves you scratching your head.
Penalties beat the Lions, Zach. Is that fair to say? It wasn't the Packers. It was the penalties.
And the Packers.
Well, the Packers had a small role.
Here's why. Because the early on in that game, if you settle for field goals when you have an opportunity to score touchdowns,
that's fair.
More often than not, you're going to put yourself in a position where you end up losing the game. And Aaron Rodgers did make that great throw near the end there to Lazard. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, most quarterbacks can't make. And that leads us to what's happening here. We have seen, Mully, over the early portion of this season, a number of teams have to adjust dramatically, offensively, what they do.
Dramatically. Made up word that combines both dramatic and drastic.
See, I'm not the only genius here on the radio.
That was Scottie Pippen, I think, who first used that term.
But seriously, you look at Frank Reich and what he had to do quickly once Andrew Luck surprisingly retired.
Unbelievable.
Switching up the offense in Indianapolis and finding a way to succeed.
Yes.
You look at the team that's coming to Soldier Field this weekend, and they have one of the best quarterbacks in the history of football. Not just this season, but Drew Brees is one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game. And their ability to go from a high-powered offensive attack to a control-the-clock, ground-and-pound attack and still keep on winning, it's a true credit to their head coach, Sean Payton. And it gives you an idea, a blueprint, if you will, for what the Bears have to start doing to win with the personnel that they have on the field.
Well, I wouldn't argue any of that. And I would think that there's stuff going on around the league that is it's kind of mind-blowing, and stuff that will affect the Bears, like the Rams going out and getting Jalen Ramsey, like the L.A. Ramseys, if you will, going out and getting a man who used to scream Duval. That's all over, Kevin. You gotta kill that cut now.
I'll never kill the cut.
Yeah.
It's now associated with Gardner Minshew.
No, it's not.
I think it is.
I think you're wrong.
Well,
Kevin had like some like long lost love who was from Jacksonville, so he plays that Duval cut every chance he gets. And now he can't do it because that's Jalen Ramsey and he's no longer part of the crew. And he had like an NBA player sort of removal, if you will. He responded to coaching or to criticism like an NBA player and got himself out of town. And if you're that good, you can do it.
Well, we've seen the Bears take advantage of two guys who have done it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's the same type of thing. I think that with Khalil Mack, if you're referring to that, that is actually one where the team could not pay him. And he was, instead of making the $13 million, he wanted the $141 million, so he forced a trade. But it's different than just becoming disgruntled.
He never talked to John Gruden.
Right. And we've always looked at that as if Gruden were somehow the villain, when in reality, if they didn't have the money and they knew they couldn't, shouldn't they have gotten something for him?
I just think, to me, the Bears have done this twice. The reason I bring it up is, and I'm going
and
on.
And what's the other one?
And the other one is Jay Cutler.
Oh, right.
Okay. Who got into it with a new coach in Denver, yeah, forced fair. His way out.
Cutler is more appropriate, I think, than the other.
But the reason.
I had blocked out the Cutler era, but thanks for bringing that
up. No, because as soon as any time I see two first round picks traded for a guy, and you heard the hysteria yesterday because people are saying, oh, man, this takes the Rams to the next level. And I would submit. Hold on.
Yeah.
Because we've seen this happen over the course of NFL history a ton, and it doesn't work out as much as you think for the team that acquires the great star. For example, you look at Cutler. You thought he was the final piece to the puzzle with the Bears. It was an era in which you felt unfulfilled, right?
Oh, most definitely.
And while Khalil Mack is here, and he has made the Bears relevant again. He's the reason that people are frustrated this year because the Bears aren't playing up to expectations, because he puts you in a position to compete for a playoff spot. The problem is, if you do not have a quarterback in the National Football League, no matter how good the rest of the pieces are, you're not winning a championship.
And the Bears have a quarterback coming back, most likely, right? And interesting, some of the stuff that is his coach, one of his coaches, had to say about him, and we will get into that at the 5 at 5. We will talk about the Jalen Ramsey trade from the Bears' perspective. It's always interesting to look at things through a particular lens when you are the local radio station covering the local teams. And we know the Titans now. Marcus Mariota has been benched for Ryan Tannehill. That is is that the first of these guys to drop, right? When you talk about guys like Jameis Winston and Jared Goff and Mitchell Trubisky, highly drafted guys that haven't lived up to the contract quite yet, although Mariota did lead a team to the playoffs and win a game, and Mitch went to a playoff game. I don't know if he was a passenger or not. We'll get your thoughts on that. We're going to get into some baseball stuff. The Nationals, they lost 31 of their first 50 games. It's not about how you start, Zach. It's about how you finish. And now they get to rest up that rotation and prepare for the World Series. That's a nice little minor advantage for them. The Astros are up 2-1 on the Yankees after a victory yesterday. They jumped on a guy early, and there's all sorts of questions about whether they're getting scouting reports that are too good. Do they know what's coming? Have they figured out the tipping of pitches? We'll get into some Bulls stuff, and we'll get into the Blackhawks. They're off till Friday when they host the Blue Jackets. But next, it is the 5 at 5, and we have the Ginger Hair Genius to help us through it. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio. 6-7 to the score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5 brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight. Download the new Sport Clips haircut app and check in. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
When you see the bounty the Los Angeles Rams gave up for Jalen Ramsey, does it make you appreciate the Khalil Mack trade that much more? And can Ramsey have a Mack-style effect on the Rams?
Well, I don't think he can have the same Mack-style effect on the Rams because the position is so different. I mean, you know, being a shutdown quarter, you can take one element, one weapon of the game away, which is a huge, big deal and a very important thing to have. But Mack can change the game on a turn, right? Mack can force a fumble. He's the master of the strip sack. It's a different thing. It does make you think, though, that the Bears did better than the Rams did in that deal. The Rams obviously giving up two first round picks and a fourth rounder in 2021 in order to make this trade. The Bears gave up two first-round picks with a third-rounder and a sixth-rounder, but they got back a second-round pick, which is that is a really big pick to get back at a conditional fifth. So I think it's interesting. If you look at what the Rams did with the Mack trade and follow all the pieces, because there was a lot of stuff that went on, they basically turned that trade into like 10 players or something. They kept trading other pieces and moving things around, and they wound up with a real booty in terms of the amount of players that they brought in and the quality of some of them. They got a pretty good tight end, a pretty good wide receiver. They got the running back. I mean, there's a lot there. But Khalil Mack is a generational talent. Is Jalen Ramsey a generational talent? He's a top corner in the league, but I don't know that we can sit here right now and call him a Hall of Famer. Could be, could get there. Whereas I think Khalil Mack is definitely a Hall of Famer. He's that good a player. And again, the positions are a little bit different. So I think that the Bears really won that trade. Ramsey, it's going to be hard for him to turn around the Rams season. He'll be real good, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't fix their offensive line issue.
Ramsey's 24 years old. He's signed through
quarterback problem. Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's your show. Ramsey's 24 years old. Signed through 2020. He's a two-time Pro Bowler, first-team All-Pro, lockdown corner, plays with confidence, takes away half the field. For a defense that's already pretty good, the issue is this, though. It's a third-place team right now that has Super Bowl aspirations based on last year. But I don't believe the Rams, even with Ramsey, are better defensively than the team you saw in the Super Bowl last year. And, for example, the impact that Mack had on the Bears, he took them from an irrelevant team with no playoff aspirations to a team that was knocking on the door of possibly competing in the Super Bowl last year. That's the kind of impact that Khalil Mack had. I don't think Ramsey's going to have that type of impact. And what it does show you is if they couldn't win the championship last year when they absolutely dominated Tom Brady in that Super Bowl and limited what the Patriots could do offensively, and that was a Pats team that had Rob Gronkowski playing, not this Pats team this year. And if they couldn't win it last year, they're not winning it this year, no matter how good Jalen Ramsey is.
Yeah, Jalen Ramsey's an outstanding player. He is a great personality. He's a big fan of himself, confident young man, but he should be. He's a very, very good player, very rich young man. Entertaining is all hell. That being said, comparing a cornerback to a pass rusher, it's not quite, the math doesn't work out that way. You know, a guy like Khalil Mack, any pass rusher really, can affect the game more often and more impactfully than any player can in the secondary, and especially a player like the caliber of Khalil Mack. We're not even talking about an average guy or an above-average guy, but Mully, like you said, a surefire, locked-in future Hall of Famer. It makes the Khalil Mack move look almost like a bargain. Now, giving up all of these draft picks, which Pace has done very frequently during his tenure, some might call it mortgaging the future. it's what he has to do to make himself think he's getting this team closer to winning a Super Bowl. I don't think they were particularly close last year. They won 12 games, but they laid an egg and scored 15 points at home in a playoff game against Philadelphia. So I wouldn't say that they were that close. Early signs indicate they may have taken a step back in certain areas of the team so far this year. But when you look at what the LA Rams are doing, they're kind of in a little bit of a panic mode right now. And they have shaken up their secondary so much now over this past week. It's not going to solve the quarterback problem that they have themselves or the offensive line problem that they have. But it will make them better in at least one aspect. And they're getting a very good player.
Yes, I appreciate the Khalil Mack deal the Bears made even more, and I always will, but because of the player that they got in return. But yeah, as you pointed out, Mully, you get the second round pick in 2020 and a conditional fifth round pick in 2020 along with Khalil Mack, and the Rams just got Jalen Ramsey and nothing additional to that in terms of draft picks. So yeah, I appreciate this Khalil Mack move even more. Is there going to be a Mack style effect that Ramsey brings to the Rams? I just don't think so. It's a different position, totally different player. The Khalil Mack is a player that makes an impact every time he's out there, and he's a game wrecker. I guess apparently, unless he's playing the Raiders, but that was just an off game for Mack. His impact is felt every time he's out there, every snap. So just no comparison.
Well, the beauty of this segment is every time one of us says something in it, somebody else could have a disagreement with it, and that's the idea. We're creating conversation, right? I mean, let's tap the brakes on both these guys being Hall of Famers, okay? I mean, he's got 4.5 sacks right now.
Khalil Mack?
I want more. That's not enough. 4.5 sacks right now.
He's not a Hall of Famer?
Not right now, he's not. No, he's not a Hall of Famer right now. I mean, ask me at the end of the season when he's got 18 sacks, maybe, then he's a Hall of Famer.
Dude, I don't think he's getting 18 sacks.
You know, Ray says it's just one game with the Raiders. I'm worried the Raiders put out a blueprint on what to do with Khalil Mack.
Double, triple team him?
Get a little physical with him.
That means your boy Leonard Floyd should be a Pro Bowler.
Well, he should be, but, you know, then he needs to have double-digit sacks. Okay, does Jalen Ramsey take half the field away? I heard a guy overnight say, oh, you know, he's like Deion Sanders.
Less?
He's like Champ Bailey, where literally I would tell my quarterback, wherever he is, we don't throw the ball that way. Is that true? I haven't seen enough Jaguars. I mean, does he shut half the field down? The other problem is the Rams, you know, Talib went on the IR yesterday, everybody, just in case you didn't know that. So it's not like now they have,
right?
They don't have those two guys playing cornerback.
They traded the other corner.
Right.
So they have one starter coming in and two going down.
So, you know, to the point of how much this affects that Rams defense moving forward. And the issue, you signed Jared Goff to a contract fit for a king.
He's going to make $30 million in 2 years.
Right. And he's not, their offensive line is hot garbage
it's
right now.
No
they're
good.
Inside of their.
They actually made a trade with Cleveland for a backup guard, I think.
Yeah.
Center?
Center guard. But the other thing is, to pick up on your point, the reason that they went out and made this deal is because they already have the Khalil Mack on their club
right. In
Aaron Donald.
Right.
So what they're looking
now
to do.
There's a Hall of Famer, okay? That's the difference. This is kind of like in my opinion, this is, again, everybody can shake their head. It's the Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher argument, okay? Like, when you see Aaron Donald, that's a Hall of Famer, okay? I'm not – Khalil Mack's very good. Brian Urlacher's very – when you saw Ray Lewis play middle linebacker, you knew that was a Hall of Famer. Not the Hall of Very Good, the Hall of Fame. Also, Zach, I mean, I love you, but knocking on the door of a Super Bowl – They were knocking on the door of winning a playoff game. That's what they were knocking on the door of. You didn't even win a
playoff
game.
No, I said knocking on the door of possibly getting to the Super Bowl because
knocking on the door and Super Bowl in the same sentence.
I think most people felt last year if the Bears beat the Eagles, they were going to beat the Rams.
Yeah,
and then you put yourself in a situation where you're in New Orleans, tough place to play, obviously, but you're one win away from getting to the Super Bowl.
I think the Rams thing was likely. I don't think this last year the Saints, they were just too explosive. I just don't know that the Bears, if they were down 10. It's the same problem with the Bears. As soon as the Bears are down 10 points, you don't know if they can come back with either of the quarterbacks on the roster right now.
Well, I think that's a great question. And for us, it's pretty easy.
With Hakeem Hicks joining Kyle Long on injured reserve yesterday, Hicks is expected back in Week 15. Unlike Long, will the Bears have an easier or more difficult time filling slots than New Orleans on Sunday? The Saints' Alvin Kamara reportedly has a high ankle sprain, while starting corner P.J. Williams has been suspended 2 games by the league.
I think the Bears will have a more difficult time, and not because of the players that they lost. Hicks and Long are terrific players and tough to replace, but you can replace them. I think that Kamara's a tougher guy to replace because he goes into that game wrecker type of definition and changes the game. But here's the difference. The Saints have a coach in Sean Payton who has proven he can adapt. They don't have to win one particular way. We have not seen the Bears under Matt Nagy be able to win differently than that stereotypical image of what a Matt Nagy offense is supposed to look like. And that is a big, big problem for the Bears going forward.
I think that Alvin Kamara, out of the group of players we're talking about here, is the guy. He's really the player that, and by the way, he was drafted with a Bears draft pick. Isn't that bizarre? The Bears held that pick in that draft. But Kamara is the kind of guy, you said it, he's a game wrecker, right? I think Hakeem can be a really good player and a really powerful player, but I don't know long term what happens. But you're at home, you want to stop the run, you know, get some run stuffers. They have guys that can move in. They can. We saw them beat the Vikings with a great running back or a guy that has been running over the league. So I think they can replace Hakeem. Frankly, and I got nothing but respect for Kyle Long. This could be an upgrade. Kyle Long has been so injured and was so just not himself in that game in England that actually might be an upgrade. I think that the player here is Kamara, and I think the high ankle sprain takes 6 weeks. And, you know, it's the wrong corner that's going out. If it was Lattimore going out, I think the Bears could throw a parade. But I think of those four guys, the player that will have the biggest impact on the game by not being there is Kamara. And I know they've got Latavius Murray, and they can still run the ball a little bit, but it's nothing like having this guy. He is an unbelievable weapon in the passing game.
Yeah, I mean, Kamara is one of the elite offensive players in the entire National Football League, and it will be difficult to replace a guy like that. But, I mean, Hakeem Hicks is an elite defensive lineman. Yeah. They're going to have a really difficult time replacing him. And I'm with you, Molly, on Kyle Long as well. If his name wasn't Kyle Long and he wasn't this first-round pick and this guy who's been tenured with the team for so long, he's been playing so poorly that he would have been out on his rear end probably years ago with all of the injuries and the decline in his play that he's experienced over the past few years. So we're talking about Kyle Long like it's going to be, you know, the Bears missing out on the Kyle Long from 4 or 5 years ago. It's not that same Kyle Long. This Kyle Long, you might even say that Alex Barrs could potentially be an upgrade on the 53-man roster the way Kyle Long's been playing, and Ted Larson as well. So that isn't a huge concern to me, though. But Hakeem Hicks, not only this weekend, but potentially until Week 15, I think that's a really, really, you know, horrible case scenario for the Bears here, who were very lucky to be healthy mostly last season. They've already experienced a lot of things going in the opposite way this year, and it's going to be really troublesome to try to replace a guy like that.
Hakeem Hicks is one of the best players on the Bears defense. I mean, he's up right up there with Mac, 1A and 1B, but this defense is so deep, they're going to be okay without Hicks. This is just such a good defense, and they're so deep, they'll be okay, and hopefully we see him back at the end of the season. But in terms of Kyle Long, the right guard position, this is a change that is overdue, but now comes the time for adjustments and see, you know, who's going to be the guy that's going to fill the position. Is it going to be Rashad Coward? Is it going to be Alex Barrs? And then there's going to be some time for them to get accustomed to the role. That O-line overall this needs improvement. It's not that you're missing Kyle Long, but now's the time for somebody to get adjusted to the role there and make a difference and be a part of improving that O-line. I agree with the idea that it's going to be Alvin Kamara that is missed the most in terms of what he brings to the Saints. It's going to be more difficult to fill just what he can do on the offensive side of the ball for the Saints.
This is a tough one. I think it's this week, if we're talking about this week only, I mean, Kamara's impact on the game is much bigger than the other guys. Also, this has a role in Hicks being not there, right? I mean, if Kamara's not there, then they're not going to probably run the ball as much, okay? So, and if they do, it will be with a lesser running back. So then maybe Hicks's importance in stopping the run and garnering a double team isn't there. So for this week, if Kamara's not there, I think that has the most impact on the game. You know, we have to see, Nichols is like this wild card, right? Because Nichols and Hicks really didn't play together this year. I mean, they kind of played in the first game of the year, right? But that was it. So if he, there was a lot of talk about how good he was, came out of nowhere, out of Delaware. Hicks talked that guy up. He's got the bad hand, okay? But if he can step up, then maybe he can fill the void. But we need to see guys like Nick Williams and Isaiah Irving and Roy Robertson-Hare. All these guys have to step up too, like they had to. And now that they're the guy instead of the backup guy, how different is that, right?
I mean, that's a pretty general question.
When quarterback coach Dave Ragone says comparing Mitchell Trubisky to draftmates Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, quote, has never been constructive, is he damning Trubisky with faint praise? And will Trubisky ever win such comparisons?
No, he won't win in comparisons to those two other quarterbacks. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Did you watch the game Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think it's really interesting if you look at the development of the three guys. I think that, and I want to be careful about how I say this, but I worry that the injuries, the line issues, everything going on around Patrick Mahomes, the MVP award, the circus, is there a concern that now that he's injured and the way that he's kind of not moving in the same fashion, that he's kind of throwing the ball even weirder and some of these odd different, you know, release points and no looks and all this stuff. You know, I'd love to see the guy play quarterback a little bit more. I thought he got away from that last week in that game. And again, there's a lot going on around him, but set your feet and throw the ball like a quarterback every once in a while. He's a phenomenal talent. Maybe that would help him a little bit. I think that that Deshaun Watson is entering into MVP territory. He looks absolutely unbelievable. I mean, he's not the MVP. You know, Russell Wilson's the MVP right now. Christian McCaffrey has an argument to make. But I think that Deshaun Watson really looked good this year, and that has been a great boost to them. I've not seen this flash yet from Mitch, and I don't know that we're going to see it. And, you know, you look at Marcus Mariota getting benched, and you can't help but think that is that in the offing, maybe a year down the line, maybe 2 years down the line. But how are you going to how is this going to work here in Chicago? How will this scheme work? How will this system work? How will this quarterback work? There are a lot of questions to figure out when he comes back. So it's damning him with faint praise.
You know what's scary? Forget about comparing Mitchell Trubisky to Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. You look around the league, there are 32 teams.
Yeah.
How many of them would take Mitchell Trubisky as their starting quarterback right now?
Not as many as you'd imagine. Not as many as you'd want. He's a middle-of-the-road quarterback at best.
At best, yeah.
At best.
And I think that's part of the problem. The other thing is, when you look at the young quarterbacks around the league today, you know right away if they're good. They don't need time to show you that they're going to be good. Now, there was the exception with Jared Goff under Jeff Fisher that first year in Los Angeles. But when immediately surrounded by a competent offensive mind, Jared Goff took off. And that's what happened to Trubisky last year. He's supposed to take that next step this year. It has not happened for a variety of different reasons. But look across the league at all the young quarterbacks that are having success immediately, whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo. And when I say immediately, I'm talking about immediately when they take the field. Baker Mayfield, and it just keep going on and on and on. Watson, Mahomes, and let's go a step further. What about all the backup quarterbacks? You know, for a long time from you, Mully, we used to hear, man, if your starter goes down and you have to play your backup, your season is over. Well, that's not the case in Carolina. That's not the case in New Orleans. That's not the case with the hippie playing quarterback in Jacksonville now. I mean, come on. If you're good, you immediately show that you're good on the field, and we keep waiting for Mitchell Trubisky to show you more, and it's not there.
Well, I agree with most of what you said there. You lost me at Baker Mayfield because he's taken a massive step back this season. He's been pretty dreadful.
He lost you at Jacksonville. Well, that's your guy.
Yeah, Minshew too. I do like what you brought up there regarding Jared Goff last season, Zach, and what McVay and that coaching staff did for him. Are you implying that Mitchell Trubisky is less to blame for his shortcomings here in Chicago and maybe more to blame is Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich?
No, I'm saying that Mitchell Trubisky is not on the same level as those other quarterbacks. Lamar Jackson, for example, is a quarterback. All I kept hearing was what he can't do. And you know what? The Ravens found a way to show you that there's a lot there and you can win with this guy. And last year was year two for Jared Goff in McVay's system.
Right.
And look at what happened. This is year two with Trubisky and Matt Nagy, and it's gone backwards. You're not seeing the ascension.
You're right. If it hasn't gone backwards, I think the best you could say that it's become stagnant. And with the injuries popping up now this early in the season for Mitch, that's not going to help him out anymore either. Him sitting on the sideline, read a playbook with a headset on is not going to make him a better quarterback. Going in there and making plays and being in football games is the only thing that's going to make him a better quarterback. Now, as far as Dave Ragone trying to, you know, shoot down these comparisons to, I mean, they were all drafted together. Everyone in any profession, no matter what you do, whether you're a radio host or a construction worker or an accountant or anything, you're going to be compared to your peers and the people that you work with or your contemporaries. So, of course, that he needs to be compared to Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. And, Zach, I agree with you. He should be compared to every starting quarterback in the league. And you guys are right. He's middle of the pack at best right now, and the injuries aren't helping.
Well, I understand the comparisons because of the year. They were all drafted together, but I agree. It's not constructive. This is where I agree with Ragone. It's not constructive because they're just not on the same level. They're just not. Mitch Trubisky is not on the level of Watson and Mahomes. And so from that standpoint, it's not constructive. Now, is it damning with faint praise for Ragone to be saying that? I mean, I wouldn't say that. I think he's just being realistic, but maybe it's inevitable for it to be damning with faint praise just because of the fact that they're all in the same quarterback class, in the same draft class. In terms of him ever winning such a comparison, no, it's not ever going to happen. Now, Mitch can get better. He can. He needs to for the Bears to have some some sort of Super Bowl aspirations. He has to take some sort of steps forward, but no, he's never going to win a comparison to Watson and Mahomes. That's not going to happen.
Well, as Kevin pointed out, this is something that's been going on as long as there's been, I mean, before sports talk radio even existed, right? I mean, you know, our fathers' fathers debated starting pitchers and leadoff hitters and quarterbacks and coaches. And okay, now that's one thing. Now, of course, it's counterproductive for Dave Ragone to be asked and comment on this. That I guess I understand. But the real question, what you really want to know as a fan, is this: is Mitchell Trubisky sensitive to being compared? If those two guys are in his head, if they're on his radar, if he watched that game, like, do you think Mitch Trubisky sat in front of a television set last Sunday like most of us did and watched that game? Right now, if he did and he had like cold sweats while he did it, that's what's concerning to me as a fan. But it's natural for us to talk about it. And to Kevin's point, not just those two guys, it's not even who you got drafted with, it's every single quarterback that commands under center or in shotgun for every starting team in the NFL, that when you're one of those, you get compared to each other.
And Dustin, to agree with your point, Mitch is very fortunate he's playing in Chicago, because if he wasn't, then people would be comparing him to past quarterbacks, right. And there'd be a whole nother point.
Right. There's nobody. There's yeah. No, you know, and again,
because we
course,
don't know what a quarterback looks
exactly.
like.
Exactly. That's my
we
point.
We talked about this behind the scenes the other day. You know, part of this, like Jason, you know, Jason Hayward's all right as a baseball player. He's just not worth that kind of money. Mitchell Trubisky's all right as a quarterback. He just wasn't worth the number two pick and trading up to go get him. That's the problem.
When those other two guys were available and you didn't have to make any trade to get them. Right, it was again, just a poor evaluation.
Yes.
And it was
you could have traded down. Every draft Nick had the same grade on these quarterbacks, though. Nobody said, like, Trubisky was always the number one quarterback out of these three by all the draft Knicks.
I don't know. That's accurate.
That's not accurate.
Okay, here. And I'm saying it is. You two say it's not. Go back
now. We have
year.
To do research to disprove
well, yeah,
you.
Yeah, because I've done the research, and you're telling me
he's
I'm
done
wrong.
Done the research.
So
right. That's why there was complete shock that the Bears traded up to two to get Trubisky.
That's why the San Francisco 49ers in the war room, according to Peter King, were like, "Who do they want? Who are they going up for?"
The
it's
same crappy
be the pass rusher.
The same crappy pass rusher they took, and they thought they outsmarted them.
Now I would go a step further, and I think one of the problems one of the problems with Trubisky is that he was a guy who did not have a lot of time to develop at right. the college level, like Mahomes and Watson didn't have that kind of experience. And the plan wasn't to have him play as fast as he was forced to take the field. That's because they swung and missed in free agency that year, too,
by Mike Glennon.
And that's the problem. The Bears have just made some poor evaluations at the quarterback position under this regime. It doesn't mean you can't win with Mitchell Trubisky. He's just never going to be a quarterback that you win because of. He's going to be a quarterback that you win with. And when you pick a guy number two overall, you want a quarterback that you're going to win games because of.
Is that a baseball question? Is that about the game?
I mean, it's about baseball, yeah.
Or did you get here late?
Does winning a minor league gold glove mean more for Cubs catcher Johnny Pareda or White Sox infielder Nick Madrigal? And please explain your answer.
This might be one of the top five worst questions in 5 at 5.
I sincerely doubt that. I'm here every day, Zach, and let me tell you, there have been many worse.
Did you contribute it?
I did not. But I didn't
see your question.
I didn't know that I was going to do the show. Remember, I'm like in the firehouse. I wait for the the alarm, and then I slide down the pole, and I'm ready to go. So that's
you're usually dancing around that thing.
That's why I'm here. And you say it like it's a bad thing.
It's great exercise.
I would say, without having watched these two guys, that anytime you have a gold glove catcher, that is a huge deal. So I'll go with the gold glove for the Cubs catcher, Pareda.
Yeah, I would say that it's definitely Pareda. And I think the reason, though, is maybe one that will answer the question. If you're thinking about trading Wilson Contreras and you have a guy who's a gold glove catcher in the minor leagues, doesn't that make making that move more palatable as much as maybe people don't want to make that move? So it comes down to depth and system. It comes down to whether or not, you know, you can. How many of these guys, if the Cubs want to actually change the way they look or change the players they have, how many of these guys are really tradable? And Wilson Contreras might be the one. He might be the guy that could bring you the biggest haul. He might be the guy that you could afford to lose if you have a minor league gold glove catcher. So that would be the reason for the question.
Well, for me, it's Nick Madrigal, because while I don't put a ton of stock into gold glove awards, right, either in the minors or the majors for that matter, when you look a little bit deeper into the statistics here on Pareda particularly, he is clearly a very good defensive player, but he's got no bat whatsoever, career .248 hitter in the minors. So if he ever makes it to this level, you'll be very one-dimensional, probably a backup at best, whereas with Madrigal, hopefully you get more of the complete package. He was drafted for his bat, not the glove, so the glove is just kind of a good added bonus there. Therefore, unsurprisingly, I'm going with the White Sox youngster.
Well, this is good for both of them, good for both teams, but I will go with Kevbo here on the on Madrigal here, second base position. He only had 4 errors and 488 chances to make errors.
3 different levels.
That's right, and all the levels. So yeah, I'm going with Madrigal here.
Well, here's the, you know, I get the whole White Sox, Cubs. I'm a fan of this team. You're a fan of that team. But, you know, defensive catching is so much more important on the major league level than second base defense, right? I mean, you would argue that maybe your worst infielder plays second base, right? You can get away with kind of hiding a guy there if you've got a really good shortstop and a good first
baseman. Don't tell the Cubs.
Exactly.
But they hide it. They tried to hide 10 guys there.
You know, I guess one of the questions this also leads to is Wilson Contreras more tradable now? Or is Wilson Contreras, you know, so these two guys now are tradable in a package deal where they might bring something in the future because you want Will? Go ahead, Zach.
Can I just, because the number one prospect that the Cubs have after Nico Hoerner is a catcher named Miguel Amaya. Right. So if the Cubs decide to trade Wilson Contreras, which I don't think they will, if they decide to trade him, it will not be because of Pareda. It'll be because they have Amaya in their system and they have a guy they trust right now in Victor Caratini. But I don't believe you trade guys like Contreras because that's what gives you an advantage over most teams, having a guy that gives you the kind of offensive production at that position that most teams can't match.
I'm not suggesting it either, by the way. I'm just saying that
they got to trade somebody. They got to do something.
Yeah, they have other guys that you can trade.
Would you rather trade Chris Bryant or Javi Baez than Wilson Contreras?
I think that Wilson Contreras is a guy that there are no untouchables, according to Theo Epstein. Right. But I think you can replace an outfielder at the corner in different spots, depending on what you get back. You can replace a third baseman with power if you get the right guys back. It's tough to find. You will not find another catcher who hits like Contreras hits, no matter how many trades you go out and make.
This is sort of a trick question.
Has LeBron James damaged his legacy with his remarks on China? Do we expect too much when demanding our athletes comment on all league-related matters, including ones outside their purview?
I think that there's been a very severe backlash to what LeBron had to say, and it came across just horribly wrong. And when LeBron was coming up, I heard Les talking about it. When he came into the league, he talked about how he represented people that didn't have the same chances as other people. He represented kind of all of society. Well, he doesn't do that anymore, right? He represents a guy that's making a lot of money and knows how to make money. I think LeBron's legacy will be more determined by whether he can win in L.A. or not than it will be over something that he said about China. I think it was a misstep for LeBron. I think that, I always thought he was a pretty sharp guy and had a pretty good sense of when to talk and when not to talk, when to defend himself and when to not say anything. And getting involved in that was just silly. I mean, and the way he did it, all he cares about is how it affects the bottom line of sneaker sales. He doesn't care a hoot about what's actually going on or about human rights. And really, if there's anyone misinformed, it would probably be LeBron in this situation. Having said that, I do think that we do expect athletes to somehow, and I don't know why, be leaders in their community, and they're just not prepared to do that. And LeBron certainly wasn't at that point.
You know, I think LeBron is a leader in his community, and I think he's done some phenomenal stuff over the years, including building that school.
Yeah, but he's not a world leader
in his hometown. But this is a complicated issue in which you're talking about racial, socioeconomic, geopolitical layers. Yeah. And we live in a world where we want answers right now in black and white. Well, sometimes when issues are complicated, there's a lot of gray, and there's a lot of gray in this particular issue. And I think sometimes it's okay to say, you know what? I'm not qualified enough. I don't know enough about this to give the kind of response that you're looking for. But what happens is we live in this world where especially the younger guys like LeBron and the players of this era, they're on social media all the time. And even if they're not tweeting or right, Facebooking, they see the criticism.
They are on Instagram then.
Right? Or on Instagram or, Snapface, all that kind of stuff, right? But, and I say that because you sometimes feel compelled to say something because you're receiving criticism. And sometimes it's okay to say, you know what? I don't know enough. I get that there's the pressure from the shoe companies to make a lot of money in China. So you're trying to kind of, and you don't want to lose your values as an American, but sometimes saying nothing might be the right step as opposed to saying something that doesn't sound that bright.
Yeah, I think LeBron James is a smart guy, but his intention, as he has stated many times before in the past, is he wants to be a billionaire. He doesn't want to be a businessman. He wants to be a businessman. And we live in a world of, you know, plutocrats and oligarchs where everybody can be bought and sold, whether you're a congressman or anybody, frankly. It's the same reason that Barack Obama bailed out Wall Street and the big banks. It's the same reason that Donald Trump kisses the ass of Saudi Arabia and Russia. It's the same reason that you see George Bush and Ellen DeGeneres sitting together in Jerry Jones's box. They're all members of the wealthy ruling class. It's not Democrats. It's not Republicans. It's not the deep state. It's all millionaires and billionaires. And they're really the ones in charge. As George Carlin once said, it's a big club and you ain't in it.
I don't think his damage will be his legacy will be damaged as an NBA player. But, you know, as you guys pointed out, there's been some great philanthropical things that LeBron has done. But I think he just came out looking like a jackass on this one. And maybe we are asking a lot for players to comment on league related matters all the time. But LeBron's the face of the face of the NBA. So he just still surprised at LeBron James on this.
LeBron James.
That's your comment?
That's it.
We have a texter who I thought captured the whole essence of it. Leave Far East political issues to Dennis Rodman.
We could all agree on that.
Ambassador Rodman.
Self-proclaimed. Ambassador. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw. We've got Zach this morning on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.